it positive.
I know people that have good predecessors. Like, oh yeah, I know. Who's that?
Sure, you don't want to try to just practice law.
Work in the counsel's office?
Yes. I mean, you know.
Yes, for that, I'll fit off.
Okay, so.
Yes, so we're here.
Are you right here?
So, man.
I know you need my expertise. I do, yes.
They're not funny, so wouldn't that be?
Something better than nothing. So at this point, this is.
They haven't returned. Yeah, sorry, I don't know what the deal is. They are usually very dependable. Cater.
The doctor's real good though. Yeah, that one there.
I don't know what's happening.
That one got teared down. I retained it. Seats are falling apart.
Pam, is there any way you can get warm water?
Do what?
The water.
I like the way you think. But I think we're gonna have to stick with the water. I was grabbing that. I'm getting calls.
Do you need to help?
We love to spend money on that call.
Absolutely.
There, out of curiosity, is it allowed?
Yeah, no, for GPSA, they spend, we can't take four times. I think it's a minimum follower fine.
There's nothing appendix A or B.
But it's weird.
But we're not spending money on.
See, the rule, I mean, in essence, universities, well, they're only supposed to get over 21, or you wait to verify that.
Oh, we can verify.
I think he's asking for the student's time, we can just want to. Activity allocation.
Yeah.
That was different. President, nothing to you.
No.
You wouldn't need to worry about that.
Just second.
I mean.
We would talk to the.
No one's done anything.
There we go.
It's worked out, yeah. So I'm hoping that something will. I got a job for you.
A what?
Yeah, we got something for a year.
A year?
Still too short.
There will be here. I was told, and Marty is ill, Chris is bad matter, Logan is ill. So we have people, who are.
In the intro.
I have some audience yesterday.
Hi.
But it sounds. Interesting.
Yeah.
Did anyone post a sign on it?
I don't know.
I have sent an email to the lady.
Whatever was last year.
Have you confused people with water and wine? Then you get close to your whiskey desire.
I think I could do.
I really just suggest that given that it was, let's just get the information of the water that was in the well. Well, there wasn't any water actually, but it was sitting in a dusty area. So I wiped it out, but just, you know.
So that's the bad water.
Don't waste it.
Terrell, do you want some water?
Thank you. I'm okay. For the moment, I'm okay.
Thank you.
So you can be like.
Oh my gosh, right? Drown all the wine.
Drown all of your ambition.
It seems to work.
Yes, so far.
Maybe it's lower pressure.
So what is meeting?
Up on the fourth floor.
The north is going to be virtual.
Yes, he's going to be virtual.
Do you think that you'll reach quorum, Matt?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm
sorry. I'm on Zoom.
Pizza? Would you like glue? Because I don't see. I mean, man, pushing up. Thank gosh.
Put another backup over there. It'd be great.
Can you shoot a message in the last Slack group that we got mustard?
Right. I'm going to give this key to you because I have piano lessons starting in like.
They are on the Slack, right?
Yeah. So you're good?
Yeah, I'm good. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Terrell, Pam, I'm here.
So this is what speakers in this room. Rena, can you hear us?
Yeah.
Really?
We can hear you.
Can you hear me?
Speakers in this room are quite bad, but we can't hear you.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Rena?
Yeah?
Oh, I wish I had a recording of this. Vice President of Chapter Property and Planning comes off the meeting. And you can tell about the planning room.
But can you hear well enough on your end, Rena?
Yeah.
Okay, because you just sound like you're talking into a tin can, unfortunately, for us, so.
Okay.
Okay.
If you need anything, like, very important to say or anything like that, you can always send a message.
Yeah.
Through the chat.
Yeah, I'll do that.
It's fine, you can sort of, well, the irony, I think you
but they out of this having excellent technology.
So
yeah, just
I said
we'd
like to make sure we have good technology.
Yeah,
but
everyone's here
except
you. So
one of them. I'm just gonna create a challenge.
Oh. It's
around building.
Here. Well, you can text me.
So everyone, we do have food. Please feel free to help yourselves. We'll get started momentarily.
All
right. Also, whoever said this building has a room with a nice sound system, please tell them that we respectfully disagree.
Oh, I'm all over it. And we have plenty of time to plan for the April 23rd
yes.
one, which we do not have photo of one for, so. No, don't say you don't know where it is. Tell me where you like it, and it will be
there.
Yes. Have a good
meeting. Yeah, you should check that. If you're not, then you probably aren't.
You're the man.
You got
it.
I thought you were
going to
stop with your problem. Thank
you very much.
The way Sandy works, I don't have.
So, like, you
just turn less ice.
Not the best.
You will make do.
I get a push
for like
EUA.
I think it's very small.
Oh, that's Matt.
No. It's the associate vice president. So what's the goal?
I was on the side.
We have one. Yeah. One, as a matter of fact, we're inserting one. We're inserting. Thank you. Trell, once you're all set, we are ready to start. As one of them now.
I think I got everyone's name here, so I don't
need to. Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Time is currently 4:45. And we're in court, so I'm calling this video to come into order. First on our agenda is a call for the additions. Are there any late additions for our agenda? Okay, now we're moving to approval minutes. Are there any comments or questions on any of the minutes presented? There are the minutes of our May 8th, 2018 meeting, the minutes of our September 4th, 2018 meeting, and the minutes of our September 18th, 2018 meeting. Hearing no comments or questions, the figure list, the chair has the questions for approval minutes. Is there any consent to approving the minutes of May 8th, 2018? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Next, the chair has the question because of the speaker's list regarding the minutes of September 4th, 2018. Is there any consent to approving those minutes as amended? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Finally, the chair puts the question to the lack of speakers list regarding the minutes of September 18th, 2018. Is there any consent to approving the minutes as presented? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. That would bring us next to our presentation from Rick Burgess, the VP of Facilities and Campus Services. He has told us he's coming for another meeting, so he'll be here around 5:15. We look forward to hosting him. But after that, we'll move on really quickly to Assembly Committee and Liaison Reports. This is the first meeting where we have moved to the streamlined committee reports to allow for more time for discussion to the Assembly Committee. In essence, we will do full or abbreviated updates of things that members feel are important. The first meeting of the month, and the second meeting of the month, we are traditionally going through all the things. So that being said, are there any updates from any of our committees, liaisons, or other members?
Yeah. On behalf of the Co-Judicial Committee, we spent most of our meeting last Wednesday reviewing Resolution 1, which had been committed to the committee. After lots of discussion, where we took in the judicial administrator's point of view on the legitimacy of the resolution and about the ruling against the resolution, we did decide that it was appropriate for the TJC to renominate names and for the University Assembly to have the power to appoint those individuals to full 2 year terms, which would have started on June 1st, 2018. And that resolution would be on the agenda.
Thank you. Was someone speaking in that video to speak?
Yeah.
So, Rena, you can go ahead.
Can you hear me, though?
Okay.
So
she raised her hand. Yeah, she did. But...
So, Rena, I will say, we are the speakers in this room are atrocious, and therefore you sound like you come across in a very high-pitched, squeaky voice. So... the CSVP has an update, and I mean, you can say it or type it, whatever you think would be most expeditious.
Corner Club is piloting a new program that will do research on several Canadian campuses.
Okay,
that's good.
Well,
what is the program?
So I expect readers like to type it. So, real few minutes to type everything, and then I'm going to give you a minute to type that and see if anyone else has an update. Are there any other committees, members of the ASL?
Oh, here we are. Never mind.
And have been determined to bring down cases of sexual violence on campus. I like that.
Thank you. Give us a text up. I'm going to ask everybody for any questions for Rena. Hearing none, are there any other updates to provide? If you have any questions, please contact or via email. If you need or not, I can provide it. Hearing none, I'll just note
that the university assembly, the executive committee met last Wednesday, and we discussed a number of things, but primarily over the past couple of years, the assembly and hosts our campus welfare committee have worked to create some questions regarding tobacco and its use on this campus. They work in concert with the Scorton Center at Cornell Health to do that. And the questions were written last year, they weren't sent out. The executive committee intends to work with the office of the assemblies to take those questions and send them out campus wide, because at this point, it's been going on for a number of years, so that we can let our committee and the assembly will have data to best determine how to move forward. Any questions regarding that? Hearing none, we'll move on to business of the day, which is resolution one, appointment of the university hearing of the university review board members, academic year 2018-2019.
I guess this resolution is taking the names that were nominated by the Code of Judicial Committee, as well as the faculty names that were nominated by the Dean of Faculty. And passing this resolution would have the effect of appointing these individuals to terms which would have started on June 1st, 2018, and will last until May 31st, 2020. All of these individuals will be trained and serve in the university training board pool. That will be called upon as necessary.
This is procedurally the amended text that we did amend the resolution. Amended text is in yellow on the first page, lines 11 through 19. Are there any comments, questions, or concerns regarding resolution one?
I believe that they're supposed to be, we'll say, in a timely fashion, in a timely fashion.
Hearing none, there is no speakers left. The assembly's choices are we can postpone this, we can vote on it now to approve it, or we could conceivably send it to a committee or something else. We could send it back to the committee if the assembly has some desire.
I move that we approve.
There's a motion to approve. There's a second. Is there any incentive to do it? So, hearing none, we'll move to voting on the resolution. All those who are in favor of the resolution, please raise your hand or placard.
So Rita, she raised her hand.
Okay. All those who are opposed. Those who say, it's your team. I vote up 10 to 0 to 1. This resolution is approved. Then that also actually concludes the business that our agenda until Rick arrives in about 20 minutes. So, seeing that we have made records on it, I would ask the assembly to amenable to entering in recess.
People can't leave the room.
Yeah, don't go too far, but the assembly is in recess until Mr. Curtis arrives. Please feel free to help some professionals.
That firework question.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Do you have a copy of the resolution that requested this update to be made? We wrote it like 2 years ago, and I know there were several things that were supposed to cover, and I was just curious.
Resolution
to asking them to give an annual report on the climate action plan.
We do the resolutions, we've asked a number of times. It generally comes down to historically, they're generally happy to have that. Just that we have to call and ask them to do it in my time our meeting schedule. I'm certain we can certainly call the resolution.
No. I just meant what were the points that were just in their annual report.
I haven't looked at it recently, but I was paying attention to the plan because I was on the UA in the spec, and I wanted to make sure that the university was giving us an accurate update. Just coming in.
Yeah. And I just wondered if anybody had that, because if we could look at it.
CWC last year made a number of questions in concert with Cornell Health and Sporting Center.
Yeah.
Those questions never went out. We have to do them. We're going to work with all the assemblies just in the past to hear our communities and get gathered data.
Here's
the question.
So, in the last couple of days,
it was 2 years.
class.
Articles.
Performance or market.
I don't think.
Yeah, no, I didn't think of it.
It's performance.
Oh.
Okay, we were the question.
I think we need to do that
information. They announced it every year, so we're going to ask for it. Our when it's going right now. We also have to present that.
Can you do something exactly to do with rules?
What do you mean?
If we've got something in the agenda, I think it's a good idea.
Like, right, I make them.
Yeah.
This yeah, I make something for the public.
The next three meetings, we got the mayor comes, we have the mayor's extra meetings, because that won't work for him. We're going to have two meetings that are moving after that. I know the Jay wants to prepare a report.
It depends what you're going to have.
Yeah, the dinner report, quarterly dinner report, which is, we should be endowed.
Yeah.
I think that. So what are you, you see, I'm kind of.
A good idea.
And you're. Is it residence hall thing you're putting on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that, what are they, okay.
So. We want another thing for. So Trent, let me come back, it's probably going to be a little.
Oh, that's fine.
All that, is this not him?
Yeah.
That's how we got for the sophists.
Oh,
yeah.
So we're just going to take concerns for that area, and so like anytime like, there's a creation, like, the presence of the like residential student congress is called to like, balance it with unaffiliated students.
Mm-hmm.
So with in addition to the reform committee, I serve on like their growth committee and my ultimately I think people need the code direction, like putting it under there. But I mean, it, there could be something small on that. I think it's a little bit more sense from my standpoint. But I think everyone there is really, really digging through it. Like, it's definitely one of those like, better things to sit on. President Pop, we come into our next meeting on October 16th, which is the first full week after the fall break around Congress, ready to be completed and address it. Then we've contacted the mayor. We tried to get him to speak last year, we didn't have time. We've offered him, and this is his choice, in the last three meetings of the semester. Here when you'd like to attend. Once we hear back, we're able to work something out. So we're hopefully going to host people to those meetings. And then Richard had mentioned potentially inviting the our investment officers to talk about the down performance. I know the JDA has to talk.
You should invite Title IX.
Title IX coordinator can talk with Patrick Pitcher, because I've got a new Title IX coordinator. So that's like a preview of where we are in terms of guests for the remainder of our year, or in the semester part. And then we also have the Ombudsman, Court of Police, traditional standard for annual updates. We also have the CJC, who's been there looking at code. The working group on hate speech and harassment's final report, Full Tail, is in a draft. It's coming close to its final draft. Hopefully, it should be announced at CJC at its meeting next Wednesday so that it can come to the school assembly, the meeting on October 16th. Obviously, this is still tentative, but it would line up nicely with President Paul. In terms of what else is going on, they're working towards the budget planning committee. There's talk of renaming the budget planning advisory committee that would relay President Pop's concerns. And also, based on Charlie's report, the first meeting of the year, that the faculty's committee looks at budgets is sufficiently different and distinct from ours. And potentially, to have the NCC give the committee the authority to hold joint meetings or try and streamline it to avoid this overlap. But that's where we are currently. I've been reviewing the materials. I did like gave what we've done last year so that we know where we are and hopefully can get that done. But we're starting to close the semester and we can start staffing. And I mentioned earlier, tobacco, we have other questions that are going to hopefully going to be going out before the end of the semester. So that's really about where that's the 10,000 foot overview where the UN
is. We didn't count this
retro anymore. You're in those companies for. So if there are any questions you want to talk in formally, we're happy to do that because we have about 15 minutes so we'll see what they arrive.
Yeah, I think But I mean, so like, see that they were going to do absentee ballot, or well,
yeah.
So if you're, say you live in North Campus, where's your home?
I live near the door of your heights, and I have to walk down the house to go some months.
I know it's really
So I have class, you know,
I try. I went to I usually do the one, but they won't do it. I'm walking.
Do any American register?
Yes.
Oh, you can't get that. Although New Hampshire's trying to stop that.
That is
bad.
So, like, oh, freshman.
They said
that. Where you, like,
well, they, you're so you stop college early,
except you wait.
I think it's probably still low, though.
But it's more than would make sense. A lot of students probably should be registered at their homes, but they just don't have that choice. We need the bus places.
That's
the city.
I would say,
excited.
Wait, are you talking about the organizational districts? Yeah, most students.
And then both sides. It was really interesting because, you know, when you're.
Sorry.
When they're. They do accept the scholars, and so and then they read, you know, each other's opinions. So and then they
one of them.
Richard, nice to meet you.
Terrell,
nice to meet you.
Terrell's going to take down everything you say.
Most of it, not everything.
Not
you might say a lot.
We have a part one loaded.
Made some changes.
Okay.
Well,
we can
plug you in. Okay. Great. Okay. That's not a problem. So, of course, your computer has a display. I got 56 minutes before I restart automatically. We got to get cracking.
Okay. Well, then we'll be all set. We'll hook it up.
And see if we can plug
it in. Is it an HDMI cord?
Yeah.
It does. Okay. So, that's how the laptop.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oops. Thank you.
That's your time.
Are you trying to change the view?
Yeah, I am.
You want to hit display settings on there. So if you go back.
To extend instead of duplicate.
Okay.
Did you want to read something different than you present on air?
Yeah, I do.
I think if you just drag it over, so I think you take it.
Right. So good afternoon, everyone. We'll come back in the session. It is 5:10 p.m. Charles will know that in a minute. If you have any questions or comments, I'm going to sit off the side for this presentation, so I'm not in the way. Please raise your hand or black card.
Okay. Well, I've met most of you, some of you just this evening, and some of you before this. So I thank you for the opportunity to come in and give you an update. I think that we'll have a couple of folks from my sustainability office, ours, Cornell's campus sustainability office, coming by. Jeremy Thomas from our real estate office is also here. He can speak to some of the particular questions, if there are any. And then suburban and sort of around the city can find as well. So I wanted to give you kind of an overview of where we are with some of our sustainability efforts. For those that I'm just getting to meet tonight, I've been here for just over a year. I got here last August, right at the end of the month, when Martha had her inauguration. And I came from a career in the Navy. I was active duty doing facilities management for the Navy for 24 years. Prior to that, I was driving ships for the Navy for about six. So 30-year Navy career, finished up in the DC area doing facilities for Navy region, Naval District Washington is what they call it. And started looking for a job, and Cornell was looking for somebody to help with facilities. So I want to give you an update on our sustainability and climate action. So obviously, sustainability includes climate action, but isn't limited to it. So I'll talk on both. There we go. All right, so first we're gonna toot our horn a little bit. And this all precedes me getting here. So I take no credit for any of this. If Sarah were here, Sarah Zemanek or Sarah Brolinski, they really get the lion's share of the credit. It's a lot of effort across the campus. But we have done a lot of good work in sustainability. If you're familiar with ASHE, it's the Association for the Advancement of Sustainability in Higher Education. So it's a higher education group that really is focused on sustainability. They've got this thing called the STARS rating. So they you basically have a scoring, an annual scoring effort where you put in all the things that you've accomplished, and then they give you some recognition based on what you have done. And that's the sustainable tracking assessment and rating system. So we've gotten a gold rating now for 7 years in a row. And so that's really a testament to their efforts in leading it, but really very, very broadly based efforts across the campus. We lead the Ivy League in terms of sustainability efforts, and we've been recognized by a number of these folks here across the bottom. So very, very good stuff. And again, a lot of team effort with some good leadership from the folks in FCS. So here's some details. This is an eye chart, so I'm just gonna highlight a couple things. We put in, these are a number of the details that we included in our submission as part of the last STAR submission for HE. There are some broad categories in terms of how are you engaging with the community. And so our sustainability map and Annabelle's Grocery, involving students in the TCAT bus stops. And I think this is an important one here where we've highlighted the importance of environmental sustainability studies and major for that. In terms of buildings and energy, you know, we highlight our reinvestment into energy conservation. We continue to do that. I just signed off on a project submission that totals about $11 million over the next 3 years from us. We're trying to get a NYSERDA grant that will leverage another $3 million, and that's going to go back into energy conservation initiatives, building controls, and heat recovery. A number of our buildings, you know, lab buildings and other buildings that have high ventilation requirements, we can recover more of that heat before we crank it out, exhaust it to the atmosphere, we'll be able to save additional energy. So we are reinvesting in our existing building portfolio. We've added solar panels. We now have five different off-site power purchase type arrangements where we get credit for the renewable energy creation. We retire the credits. We don't sell them on the market. Hey, Bert, come on in. We got rolling. So Bert Bland is here. He's our Associate Vice President for Energy and Sustainability. Okay, Bert. Brought Upson Hall online, which is a LEED Platinum facility. Very nice if you had a chance to be there. And then in land and water management type things, we've got landscape trail. Our grounds department has selected a few areas which we've let go back to a kind of a meadow type state, which reduces our expenditure of energy to maintain it, and it kind of adds a little bit of natural habitat onto the grounds. So you see that in a couple places. Probably one of the more prominent ones is right as you come across the Thurston Bridge, where East Avenue comes down towards the bridge right there. And we got a little sign up there, you know, tall grass, small grass. So it doesn't look like we're just neglecting it. We're doing it on purpose. Okay, so let's take a look at overall, what's the framework for what we're trying to accomplish with sustainability, and particularly getting to carbon neutrality. This sort of outlines how we approach it. If you look at the green arrow there, first off, if you can do without building new footprint or adding new sources of energy expenditure, that's what you do. And really, I suppose in some ways we've made a virtue of necessity. After the financial crisis, we haven't been building much in the way of new footprint. Very, very little, at least here. We've had some building activity in New York City, obviously, it was the final. But if you can use the facilities that you have more efficiently, make better use of classrooms. So we've got, right now, there's an effort, they're changing over the classroom scheduling software. And part of the effort is, let's have better visibility across the campus, which is really hard. You know, people like having their space or their lab, they don't want other people messing with it. They don't want students using it because they need boxes in there and mess things up. And so there's a little natural sort of tendency to, you know, this is my turf and nobody else can have it. So, you know, I think that's something to work on. And if everybody does that, but it's not used, you know, efficiently over the course of a week, we have a lot of space that's built, but it's not being used. It's idle during that time. So that's something that we can, I think, work on and get better at, is using the footprint that we have. Once you have built it, how can you use it more efficiently? And this, for us, comes into a lot of energy conservation work that we've done. Can we go back and with better controls, better monitoring? Do we go back and do some retrofits? Once you build a building, your retrofits can be very expensive. You know, if you looked at your house, if you look at, you know, changing out your windows, there's always those window salesmen. It's really expensive to change your windows. It's very, very expensive, and the payback is lengthy, right? So it's similar for us when we look at retrofits. The way we approach these energy conservation efforts is we'll do a survey. Most times we do that in-house. Occasionally we've done it with outside contractors who come in and do a survey of what you have. They'll identify candidate ECMs or energy conservation measures, and then you'll rack and stack them by their payback period. And all the easy, low-hanging fruit, quick paybacks have already been done. So now we're into longer payback type items. Now, we plan to be here for the foreseeable future. You know, we're not a commercial venture where I put anything into this, you know, building in a strip mall because I may not be here, you know, at the end of my lease, or, you know, this whole building that I built may not be here past, you know, much commercial construction isn't built for long, long term, right? We build for the long term. So we're okay with, you know, a 10, 12, what do we have to do now? What's our payback hurdle that we're talking about?
15 years.
Which
is about a 7% return on money.
So 15-year payback, most places, commercial type ventures are not going to go for a 15-year payback on an ECM payback. But we're willing to do that because it's worth it to us. Okay. So replace. So if you can do things like we're doing with putting in solar power, we already have our small hydro plant that's been here for 100 years. We looked at wind, ran into a problem with getting that one through. I'll talk about our next effort with renewables that goes beyond just what we're doing. But you can, if you can go from a fossil fuel burning source to a renewable source, you know, that's going to get you closer. And then finally, you get to the point where you have done everything you can in terms of those previous three, and you have to look at some sort of an offset. Okay, so this is where, you know, additional renewable energy credits. We talked about one thing that Bob was involved in on the slag of how do you offset travel emissions. So there are some things where it's just irreducible at a certain point, and then you have to figure out what's an effective way to offset that. There has been a little bit of philosophical debate in sustainability circles about the, you know, the virtues of just buying renewable energy credits, RECs, on the open market. We have chosen not to do that because we don't think that's a viable offset. Okay. Now, if we create solar power, you know, and therefore generate RECs, and we take them and we put them away, we think that is a valid approach to doing some offsets. So we'll look at that, and you know, a lot of these things are cost trade-offs. So when avoiding is more or less free, these other things start to cost you money, and those get weighed against all the other demands on the university's budget, and there are many. So that's basically the philosophy that we've been following. And then if you look at things that we have done action-wise that fit with these, the campus engagement programs, the campus sustainability office really has this as their primary mission. They are engaging students. Bob and Sarah B are teaching a class this semester. We've had student interns in the office. We have student involvement in the Presidential Sustainable Campus Committee, which is revising the sustainability plan with an idea for rolling that out. We've got other sustainability student groups that we engage in, recognize their efforts. It's a very, very strong push on engagement. Climate literacy, and in terms of making sure folks understand what we're talking about and what can they do about it, this has been a strong push. Build and operate high performance buildings. Over a period of time, we have improved the energy performance of our buildings. So now, when we either do a major renovation or should we build new, we are setting energy performance standards that are very aggressive as part of that, as part of the project authorization process. So rather than come in after the fact when something's designed and say, hey, you know, we need you guys to clean this up a little bit, it's established from the get-go when a project is authorized that it has to meet certain energy intensity targets so that we, you know, so that we build it right in the middle. Earth source heat is really another topic. I can touch briefly on it today, and I know folks are should be familiar with that. I'm happy to answer any questions. I'm not going to speak much detail on that. We're pursuing the particularly the solar power aspect. As I mentioned, we ultimately were not able to make that. What was it, Black Oak? Was that the name of it? That one project was not able to move forward. EV capacity, our transportation department is looking at this. This is a little expensive, and we've been pursuing a couple grants to date unsuccessfully, although we do have a limited number of charging stations on the campus, including in our parking garages. And then we talked about the offsetting actions. We didn't get to closure on that, but it has been raised up, and I'll talk some more about what I think the way ahead is on that. Okay, so we are part of Second Nature. So this is where we report. This is where we report our statistics. You know how much we actually generate. These are all part of the president's, the university president's commitment to carbon neutrality. We signed in 07, is that right?
Yes.
Signed on to that and have committed to publishing our emissions statistics. And so we tabulate all this stuff, we load it up and provide it to Second Nature, and other organizations do too. So we have, as the baseline is compared to 2008, as you can see over the time since that 2008 period, we have brought down our total emissions. This is greenhouse gas CO2 equivalents over that period of time. Anytime you see something like this, you should ask if it's been normalized. This is not normalized. This is total. So there are variations in the, you know, how harsh the winter and how warm the summer was each year. So there's going to be a little bit of up and down. So for instance, 2014 was a very cold winter. And so we ended up burning more gas that winter, so that's a little low. But you know, overall the trend is down. How do we advance this? It's, you know, it's the that green arrow. Is we got to continue those actions to continue to make progress in the right direction. Okay, so I'm not gonna throw too much shade to our peers, but there are a lot of them that are not as committed as Cornell, and I think you know, that doesn't mean we should slack off. But it does mean that we can be, I think, justifiably proud of our progress. And you know, as you go out and mix with your peers at the various conferences that you all go to, we can't get there if Cornell is the only one, or if Cornell is in this 15% that are working this thing. This has got to be a broader effort and a broader commitment, and really not just higher education. We need to move there more broadly as a nation and as the world. So you know, we've stayed in that, and we're gonna keep our efforts going in that direction.
Oops. What's the N? in that? How many universities were in that pie chart?
Yeah, let's see. It's
it started out well over 600. So I think it's down in the high 400s now. This, so 600 whatever minus 147.
Yeah, Sarah Merlinski will know as soon as she gets here.
Yeah, she's running,
but it's in the hundreds.
It started, yeah, it was definitely high 600s back in 2007 and 2008.
So here's the, you know, I mean, part of the problem, let's be frank, is it's not cheap to do what we're doing. Okay, so if you're where we were, salad days in 07, the time frame prior to the crash, we were building all sorts of stuff. I mean, everybody was feeling pretty enthusiastic about life. That was, I think, probably not just us feeling that way. And then you hit a market crash, and I mean, there's some schools in higher education that are really in financial straits, right? And they cannot afford to do this. It's going to put them out of business to do the sort of thing that we're doing. So some of what we're doing, we're fortunate to be able to afford to do. I mean, our whole sustainability office, plus the efforts that we're able to put back in. Now, you know, we, in terms of energy conservation, I would say we see a payoff, but it takes a while to get there, and you have to finance those things up front. So the fact that some of them have thinned out, I frankly, I'm not surprised, because it takes resources to do what we're doing. Okay, so here is a new thing, and what we're doing is broadening our push on the renewables. There is a consortium that's now been established of SUNY schools and some private schools. We're in this thing. We have a representative on the board. Sarah Zemanek is going to be part of the leadership of this group. And what we're trying to do is, by, you know, pooling our demand on the market, solicit and hopefully get, you know, power purchase type agreements for renewable energy projects in the state of New York. So we're looking for in the state of New York, not, you know, some big solar ranch out in Nevada or California. We're looking for in New York, so jobs for New York, that would provide us additional renewable energy resources. One of the challenges that's become clear to me just in the time of being here is it's not very easy to get a renewable energy project through the wickets. In fact, it's very, very difficult. We saw it with Black Oak. I've seen the last couple of solar projects to kind of get through and get approved. Very challenging getting through municipal approvals. Very challenging getting through the interconnection labyrinth with NYSE. Quite frankly, I felt like they were putting some costs on the project that, you know, maybe it was some of their deferred maintenance, but, well, we got to upgrade these connectors, you got to upgrade these switches, and that became a cost of the project. There are challenges with tax policy. So even while we are supposed to be a tax-exempt institution, there have been efforts by a couple of municipalities where the solar farms are to tax the panels and the, you know, the converters and the wires. So we've gone through some protracted legal battles on those, encouraging so far, but we're not through the woods on that. So, you know, to do this stuff is very much a challenge, and it's been slow going. So we are, I won't say optimistic. I'm not optimistic yet. I'm certainly hopeful that by pooling our resources and having a little more, you know, oomph and folks behind us, that will help smooth the way on some of these things, and maybe get a little more attention in Albany. Terms of help on certainly on the regulatory and the tax policy aspect. Anything to add on this one, Bert?
Their status is they're trying to find a consultant to run the procurement of the project. So right now it's procurement and consultant stage, and then the consultant will help solicit competitive proposals for the project.
Okay.
So is for New York State, is this the best national site for things like wind and solar and hydroelectric? I would think that other sites in the nation would be better. In other words, isn't it inefficient to restrict it just to New York State?
If you're talking about pure amount of sunshine, the insulation rate that's hitting the ground, perhaps, you know, balanced against interconnection challenges and political challenges, I don't know. And I think we're going to look in state first for some of these things. Hydro, I think we're in a very competitive, and probably wind, I think you can make the case that there are other places that are that have more sunshine than we do. The challenge is you know, getting all that, getting credit for it, basically. And there may be a way to do that. I don't know. We haven't gotten anything through this one just yet. It's really just standing up. Anything to add to that one? I mean,
well,
certainly there's more sunshine in the Southwest.
New York State's offshore wind resource is really good. Manning and Lake Ontario and Lake Erie, that's good. If there was a really interstate system of transmission electric lines, high voltage DC, that could happen, then maybe that would be a real thing to do. But we're trying to decarbonize electric grid where we live, not sort of just offset it somewhere else. So this is meaningful to try to do it in New York State. Governor Cuomo has a goal of 50% renewable electric energy by 2030. We're a long way from that. So this would help with that goal and actually having our grid green up. We have a very low carbon grid in upstate New York because of the nuclear and because of the carbon. But we would like to have our projects be additional local so they're meaningful and eventually we can tap them as part of our climate action plan. So, yeah.
I have a question. So the commuting footprint has been virtually untouched. And so I'm just wondering, I just got a grant thing this morning, I said, for commercial charging stations, EV charging stations, it's a grant to actually install them. Is there been any talk of doing that around the perimeter and all the parking lots? Yeah. Putting in charging stations.
I think Ricky, yeah, definitely a lot of talk and with faculty working on it. So.
But we have some. We don't have a large number.
Because they have a new grant, and it's very attractive. I thought about it.
Yeah.
Covers 80% of the cost up to 4,000.
Yeah.
It's so yet to apply between now and December 15th.
Right. And so it's immediate.
I don't know who the faculty are you have working on.
Yeah. So, you know, it's desirable, I think, that, you know, what we've been working on is not necessarily, you know, individual electric vehicles, you know. Well, we've been pushing harder on TCAT and getting better, you know, mass transit service. And TCAT is working on electric buses. I think, you know, before we could put a bunch of these things up, we have a few that I would consider pilots, but, you know, we need to have a conversation about how much is appropriate to put up and, you know, if essentially the university, we charge for electricity, all of your grants, all your departments get charged, you know, how much electricity is then appropriate to provide to people for their cars, for their personal use to get to and from work. I don't know that we have a good consensus on how that should be treated. So I know, so on, for instance, the life I came from on the federal side, there was discussion about that, and we had put a few up, but they were for fleet vehicles. They weren't for personal vehicles. So, and for that very reason, oh, wait a second, you're going to take the tax dollars, but I'm going to give them to Richard so he doesn't have to buy gas. But Terrell, he's either taking the bus or buying his own gas. And Richard's like, great program, I love it. And Terrell's like, whoa, wait a minute, that's my tax money too, right? So I think there are some policy things that we want to think through. We have already, you know, in our fleet, we have, you know, a Leaf and a couple Priuses. And so we have some hybrid and some electric vehicles. We don't have a lot of them, and I would be looking to expand that as well.
Yeah, okay. I'm just suggesting.
Can I do one follow-up question? Just a quick follow-up question. I agree with you that this is an important topic that should deserve a lot of discussion. And you said you implied that there is some discussion or thought. I don't know where that discussion is occurring.
On which front?
Oh, well, for example, on the electric vehicles and chargers and what's appropriate and how we pay for it. So, I mean, I'm not sure what the answer is, but, and perhaps you and your staff are having that discussion and you're here with us today, so we're having a very short discussion on it. It has not come up in the SCLAG in the 2 years that I've been serving on the SCLAG. And so I don't see much mechanism for community engagement, and I would encourage you either to think about broadening out that engagement, or I guess my question is, maybe there is that engagement, and I'm just not aware of it. Did you tell me that?
Yeah, Bob. So I think you're right. It's probably not well advertised or inclusive, but
So Ilan Batar is an electrical engineer and is really advocating and doing research applications around battery and charging stations combined, and with working with Oliver Gow, who's the transportation.
The question, is there some appropriate number of charges we should put up? How does that deal with the community? How do we pay for it? Those aren't the people who do that. That's a community.
No, those are they're more interested in research. Yes, I agree.
I don't see it happening.
So there has been a transportation team on the PSCC.
Yeah.
I can't tell you everything that they've done. I know there has been one. There was some transportation team on Slack. I don't know what the report out was. But I think this is a future opportunity more than it is, more than anything. There's electric use for, for lighting and other, electricity applications. There's heating use, there's transportation. Those are the big three that you got to get your arms around for to get to carbon neutrality. And, there's some things that we can do. They're only going to get us part of the way. I mean, we're not going to get enough stations here and convince enough people to buy electric cars to solve the transportation problem. So, we are looking at the transit challenge and, how do you get people to and from work? Well, do they have to come to work every day? Maybe not. Maybe some of their duties could be done from their office at home. That depends on the type of job they got. So it turns into a pretty big discussion. How do you solve the transportation issue?
I guess I have one more.
Yep.
On that point, this is a great one, and I know that there's been discussion about it. I don't know where it's at, but the air travel, again, that's another block that hasn't substantially changed in your graph.
Right.
And there's the Finger Lakes Climate Fund, mm-hmm. and it's free for people to offset their air travel. And then there's talk about it, and I don't know what happened to
so that. So as soon as we're done, Bob's going to pick that one back up and get that back forward. We talked about piloting it, and it ran into some friction, and we haven't overcome that friction yet. But that was the team that Bob was on was advocating that, and I think it's a good idea. But we it's a lot of faculty doing the traveling. I think we got to get the faculty folks on board. Charlie was instrumental in bringing that to the attention of the Senate, and I think it was a level of support to do that. But there's an implementation challenge, and we're not there yet. So
that's what I guess the reason why we asked you to come is there anything we can do as a body representing, having this kind of conversation, looking at what our goal is, looking at those two blocks and saying, here's some possibilities.
Okay.
Is there anything we can do?
I know Bob and I thought about this. Bob, maybe if you would share kind of some of the friction that you ran into, that would be helpful because that's something that, it's a real challenge to overcome.
Yeah, sure. I mean, going back, a year and a half ago, I guess, at the SCLAG meeting, I raised that we should be doing something there, and no one else really wanted to step up to the challenge, so I was given the and I, working with others, came up with a suggestion that we have a voluntary carbon offset. When you travel, you can't use federal grants or state grants to charge for an offset, but when faculty in particular travel, the suggestion was that we voluntarily pay an offset fee for that travel. It'd be out, so you are charged it as a subtraction from your reimbursement, unless you specifically check a box and say, no, I want that money. And that the offset be used to invest in local communities, lower income people for energy improvements, greenhouse gas improvements, including people in Tompkins County, but also more broadly, the people who work in our dining halls and our custodians. Mostly don't work. We live in Tompkins County. The resistance was severalfold. The dean of the graduate school thought that it would be bad to force graduate students into it, so we all said, sure, let's leave them out. People from central administration thought it would be bad to include employees, so we said, let's leave them out. That's why I went presented at the Faculty Senate a year ago, well, December last year. There's a fair amount of enthusiasm out of there, and out of that, actually, four different departments set a voluntary basis they would like to move ahead with this program as of last March. But we then ran into the administrative support issue because the departmental administrative staff feel overworked, and they looked at this as an extra burden, and they said that without help from Day Hall and Central Accounting, they couldn't do it, and so it's been dead.
Thank you.
So that's where we are. There is real friction, and you know, folks are being asked to do more, but not resourced anymore, and that's what you bump into. So I don't think we're at a, you know, at a dead end here, but it's not an easy fix, right? So it's got to be worked. And I think, you know, I'll talk to you in a minute about where we're going with governance, but this is something we should pick back up. That's it. We're not there yet. We're gonna keep working. Okay.
All right. So let me keep going. My computer's going to reboot in 23 minutes, so I'm going to keep moving. All right, North Campus. I'll come back to this one. We'll get to North Campus in a second. So here's what's coming up. Sustainable Cornell Leadership Council. Some folks, Bob was one of them. Anybody else on either the slide or the SEC? That's it. So we've had a couple of incarnations of sustainability groups. The most recent one was the President Sustainable Campus or Sustainable Campus Committee, right? PSCC.
Yeah.
So that was created more or less around the 2007 timeframe, and then in 2015-16, SLAG, Senior Leaders Climate Action Group. So that was a sort of short-fused creation. It came out of a strong push to have a look at what we were doing, you know, with investments and what about climate action? Are we moving fast enough? We had a commitment to 2050, but that wasn't considered aggressive enough. So how do we get to 2035? We made a commitment to 2035, but how do you get there? So the Provost Commission's group said, I need a group that is going to come tell me what the options are and how we're going to get to carbon neutrality in 2035. So that's the SLAG. A lot of overlap between the two groups that was frankly never resolved. The SLAG did their stuff, looked at options, reported back to the provost. Provost said, great, you guys are done. Everybody said, wait a minute, you know, this is the only committee that has done any actual work and gotten something done. We can't, you know, go away because we still have work to do. So the provost said, okay, great. And so he tagged me and Dean Lance Collins to lead a reorganization effort that would take the two groups and pull them together, deconflict the overlap, provide clear tasking where we continue to advance on our carbon neutrality, continue to do the more broadly based sustainability efforts across the campus, not just carbon neutrality, and then we've got a roadmap to move forward. So that is going to be the SCLC, the Sustainable Cornell Leadership Council, and we met yesterday. We had another meeting previous to that about 3 weeks ago to really figure out how we move this thing forward. So very productive meeting yesterday, and we're going to probably have one more before we're ready to give at least something to the provost to tell them what we think is the way forward. But the intent is to preserve the goodness of SLAG, preserve the that sort of, you know, high horsepower, you know, action-oriented character that SLAG had, and preserve the broader based, a little less horsepower, but much more breadth that PSCC had, and have a sort of hybrid arrangement between those two, so we move forward. So that's what's in the works with the Sustainable Cornell Leadership Council. They have, while we've been in this reorganization, the PSCC has continued to meet because they have an ongoing tasking to refresh the campus sustainability plan. So they've had a number of workshops. They've been doing a roadshow. Certain folks from the sustainability office have gone out to the various colleges and talked to them about sustainability, what that means, and really have laid the groundwork for the plan. And our intent is that even though we're playing with the governance, we didn't want to just let the sustainability plan sit and continue to advance that. And these are the three areas that we see the plan encompassing, and then we'll have specific goals or action items that would fall under each. So climate change, actually some of the discussion at our meeting yesterday was really, let's be more focused on carbon neutrality, not climate change, which, you know, may not be only getting us to carbon neutrality. We think maybe that would benefit from tightening the focus. So we may change that, but that's really all about the climate change. What do we do ourselves? And then whether it stays in this group or we may move it in terms of who's responsible, but you know, how do we adapt to a changing climate? What do we, you know, we're not worried directly about say rising sea levels, you know, as others might be, but You know, we certainly struggled with drought a couple of summers ago. And so, you know, we need to be smart about that and see what we need to do from a campus point of view to build more resiliency into how we do business so that we're better able to take on, you know, a variety of situations. Sustainable campus, this is really about, this is about campus operations, operating sustainably within means of our planet resources. I would add that has to be within our means as well, right? So not everything is affordable that you would like to do. And then the third one is this empowering engaged community. So how do we really get optimal results from our living lab, which you know, we have a strong tradition of kind of trying things out locally and see if that works, and then can that be exported more broadly? How do we broaden awareness and knowledge on these topics? So these three areas that fit in the plan, and then there'll be you know, more specifics attached to each one. Energy Smackdown. Okay, so here's a thing I could use your help with, is getting the word out of this. This is going to start right after fall break, so on the 15th, runs to the end of November. Information is available at that website, and this is all about, you know, not using it if you don't need it, and then as soon as you're done, you know, you're turning those switches off, turning those, whatever that user of energy is, but this is really our chance to maximize what the user, what the building inhabitant can do in terms of reducing energy use. So this has been very, very successful in the past, and it really, you know, it's a chance to again, broaden the effort so it's not just, you know, a few folks in the sustainability office. Okay, so let me go back to North Campus, just to touch on the North Campus slide. I know there's been some people that have been involved in this one. Excuse me for a second. Our approach to this, which is in concert or in consonance with our efforts for carbon neutrality, has been to leverage our district energy system, which is very efficient, okay? To couple that with efficient building design, and then to operate so both the people that live there as well as the staff that operate those additional buildings operate it effectively. So it's these three together, really. It's not any one that's the magic bullet that solves all your issues. These are going to work in concert on campus. Okay, so let me just pause there and let's see what questions we can talk about.
Thank you very much. If you have to raise your hand, I'll add your speakers list. I have Richard, Bob, Dale, anyone else? And also, Terrell, I'm going to go real ones and ask a question.
Okay.
Okay.
Could you put that bar chart up, the one with the years and, you know, air travel and commuting and so forth and so on?
Yeah, that one. Yep.
So that yellow line is progress. Is that
net emissions?
That's the net emissions. So pretty level since 2012. Is there, in your opinion, is there some kind of lower limit that you just can't get beyond?
Well, there's a couple things going on here. First off, we are going against our baseline. Okay, so if you throw out the baseline and say you haven't done anything recently, that I think we're not taking credit for the progress since then. We changed out our central energy plant in this time frame here. So a lot of what you saw was moving away from coal and moving to our natural gas plant. There's also in this time frame additional building footprint that came on. So although we added square footage, our energy usage actually stayed flat, actually came down a tiny bit. So in terms of intensity, we've reduced our intensity while actually expanding the footprint. But the other thing that I think you see, and you're correctly identifying it, is what's the step change that's gonna really allow you, we can work around, I won't say work around the margins, but we can accomplish some small additional reductions with our energy conservation efforts, with the energy smackdown, with things like that. There will be a point, maybe it's asymptotic, but there's a point at which you you have wrung every efficiency out of what you've got, right? And now we're really into the scenario of this green arrow is I've avoided and reduced. Now I got to replace an offset. Now, earth source heat would be one of those game changer, you know, really step changes in terms of how we generate heat for the campus that would allow us to replace natural gas burning plant with basically hot water that we would get from deep in the earth. Not proven, okay, we're at the front end of that project, but that would be a way to get there. Now, let's say we give it a go, we drill a test well, we set up a test, you know, a well pair, and it just flat out doesn't work, okay? Well, the next best option, as identified in the options report, is going to be some sort of a heat pump combination, and frankly, it's not as good. It's not going to be as attractive from a greenhouse gas reduction point of view on this chart. But we're not there yet, and it may well be that either our efforts for renewables or statewide efforts for renewables will flip that grid so the grid is greener, and you could power your heat pumps, but it'd be with renewable electricity. It wouldn't be that way today if you did that, but in the future, assuming the trends continue in the right direction, we could power the campus, except it would be with renewable power, and heat the campus with renewable power as well. But I think you identified, yeah, I mean, I made a little bit of progress, and it's very good compared to the baseline, but how do you really get to zero? It's not easy. It's not easy at all.
Thank you. Next, we have Bob, and actually, Bob had his app while you were at
Richard. Yeah.
So, I'm going to give you a copy of it.
Okay.
Thank you, man, and thank you, Rick, for...
Yeah, so I got your slide, Bob. Did you see it?
No, I didn't. Let me talk...
So I think we should get your slide up here so everybody can see it on the.
Well, that's actually not my slide. That's a new slide that no one.
This is the slide that shows the range of estimates. So we've got high, low, and medium estimates, depending what source you go to. There is not agreement on what the number should be. There's not agreement on the protocol for upstream methane. So we believe that there is upstream methane. And then the question is how to account for it.
Thank you. Next is Dale.
Yeah, you spoke about the alternatives to the possibility of Earth Source Heat doesn't check out. And I've heard rumors recently that just people have been discussing that the North Campus expansion was never factored into those alternative plans, that if Earth Source Heat doesn't check out, the addition of the North Campus expansion wouldn't be included in the carbon neutrality alternatives. Can you touch on that at all?
It's
that factor
overall. I don't think it's a. I don't know that North Campus was explicitly envisioned when the.
I mean, I imagine it was in 2007.
No, not then, but like when the slag was done. I think it was in people's minds. So I guess the question is, can you get to carbon neutrality while expanding the campus footprint? Is that what you're asking?
My question is more, has it actually been included in any of the plans that have been published yet?
What was the question?
The amount that's going to cost to have that heat, if Earth Source Heat does not check out. And obviously it sounds like...
Okay. The answer to that is, in the context of the project submissions, yes. In the context of the options report or the campus sustainability plan more broadly, I would say not yet. It needs to be, right? Because this now becomes space that we need to find a solution for, right? So it will fit within the capacity of our current system. So we can heat it and cool it within our current system capacity. We have enough, we're close enough, we're near capacity, but we are going to... we'll have enough savings from other conservation efforts to bring that additional footprint in inside our current district energy capacity. Okay, so we can power it. I won't say that power, that's the wrong word. We can provide electricity to the campus. We can heat the campus using our steam from the plant, and we can cool the campus using lake source cooling to include our campus, the additional footprint of our campus. So it fits under that. Now, The challenge still is, let me go to this, dang it, 10 minutes. Gotta move. All right, let me show you something here. So if you look at the schematic of the campus, this racetrack is our district energy system, all right? Right now, we basically plug cold water into the loop using lake source cooling, we plug steam into the loop using our combined heat power. Right? That could be swapped out with earth source heat. It should provide, well, that becomes the source of heat. You see the red arrow there, solid red. That becomes the source of heat to the loop.
And now we provide it to all of the buildings that are built between now.
Yep. So we're not putting in, for instance, when we build our campus, we're not putting in gas boilers. We're just tapping into our existing loop. Okay, so if you change the source to a greener source, the whole campus gets the benefit.
I also have two more questions, that's okay. You said briefly that you had problems with expanding with or having Cornell. You said that Cornell reached a couple of problems getting involved in the energy projects. Can you touch on those?
I wasn't here for it. I understand they did not make it through municipal approvals. It wasn't on campus. It was
So it was a zoning and legal issue. It was not an energy issue.
Yeah. Heard anything on that one? That was basically there was an investor group that was going to do it and did not get the approval that they needed to proceed.
Yeah, it was in the highest point in the county over on the other side of the lake, which is in Connecticut Hill, 7 turbines, utility scale. Connected to high voltage lines and a lot of neighborhood resistance, not a lot, I mean, enough that the board did not move the project forward and the developers ran out of money. It was actually originally investor owned to get it started. They weren't going to be able to raise all the money. They put $3 million into it, it just evaporated. Quite a disappointing. Outcome of a really nice effort.
And are there other wind energy project ventures that Cornell is looking into?
Well, in the context of the New York CARES, we're going to. We expect that we'll see some wind projects in there. In terms of an individual project that we are trying to pursue, like the Black Oak thing, not right.
And the last question, does this mean with the change in the structure, will the slag no longer be meeting at all?
Well, the slag is going to become part of this new group, and it specifically, the carbon neutrality aspect will have its own probably steering committee or subgroup that's going to be part of that SCLC. So the effort's not going to go away. We won't have a separate group called Slider.
And the last question is, historically, that's had one undergraduate student who served as a member. Would that be present on this new council?
Absolutely. We want good representation across the campus.
Yeah, actually, Martha's an undergraduate. So there's a student on there. The groups that's considering what the new board of governors looks like.
And that's Martha.
Martha, I don't know her last name. She's African American.
Robertson.
I'm guessing. We do have an undergrad right now, and I think in our next discussion we're going to talk about do we have the sort of overarching structure and steering committee or working group structure right, and then who should be represented. And so we have an undergrad now. I expect we'll have one in the future.
Thank you. Noting that we're pretty much up against our time, I have Joe and Linda on the speakers list. I'm going to go Joe and then Linda, please be quick.
So, kind of in the vein of just transparency and free information and stuff like that, like, I'm an IO major. I have no idea what half of this is about. Like, just to be completely honest, I guarantee that's the same for a lot of undergraduate students. And you know, Bob, kind of everything that has happened, a lot of transparent information. I just feel like, is there a way for your office, for the university, to engage in a transparent exchange of thoughts? Obviously, Bob represents a group of people that are extremely concerned that the fight for North Campus has really taken down at the City of Ithaca Planning Board. Is there a way you can bring that conversation, that discussion that seems to have two competing narratives back to the Ithaca main campus so that students, because this is a student project, is actually being involved in a
That's a great point, and I will apologize to Bob in person. I know it's not my intent was to spit him up. I do think it's important to realize that Bob has a strong opinion on this. His is not the only one, and we're in a university where we should be having a good, robust debate on things, which we're happy to do. But this information, most of the sustainability information, is available on our website. With respect to North Campus, we have had a number of sessions. We're going to have a number more, so we're not done talking to people about the project.
it's a good project. I mean, we have worked very, very hard to meet our energy goals on this thing. It's 30% better than our current than the current energy code that's required. So we're 30% under that. So I think if folks, you know, want to have a discussion on it, I welcome the discussion because we want it to be. We want it to be perform well. We want it to be a nice place to live. We want it to be an improvement on, you know, living in a fire trap in a college town. You know, I mean, that's kind of the alternative for way too many students. So let's build them something nice that's here and it's a good project and it doesn't screw up our climate goals.
And on the timeline of that project, since the vote has been delayed till the whatever October 30th deadline that they're voting on it, what is the, like, does Cornell have any option to look to pull back the expedited like project? It seems like already on North Campus they put up a wall for the architects to start looking at. Is there an adjusted timeline that's looking at all this pushback?
When it comes to projects, we're in a generally inflationary environment. So, you know, the longer you take in the design, the longer you take in bidding, the more expensive your project tends to be. So there is a desire to keep moving. We can't do anything until the municipal approvals, right? So we're not going to get ahead of that. And I think there's a point at which we're discussing this in the team. Is like, you know, if the planning board feels harried or pushed or rushed, that's counterproductive. So we're not trying to do that. We need them to take the time to get to a good decision, and we, you know, have to trust the process. We don't want it to take longer than that, if that's possible, right? Because bid prices keep going up. The economy is rolling and construction prices. So that's kind of thing. There's, you know, that panel, and if you've gone out to the honesty, the panels out there, it's pretty cool. That's to help them make some color decisions so that we can, you know, when the thing gets approved, we're ready to vote. And we're not, oh, well, what color should we make? We're ready to move out.
Thank you very much, Linda Fraser.
Yeah. So one thing I think is very important is for you guys to agree on a way to count upstream emissions. We have one of the world's leading experts who's really obviously pretty upset. He's quoted on the Cornell homepage with a quote on methane emissions. So the guy's been studying it for years. Talk with them, figure out how you're going to count this, come up with agreed upon, respectful way to do it. Look, you can't solve a problem. It's like going to the moon. The moon is that far away. The methane emissions are this high. We have to call it like it is. Yeah. And I really like what Joe said about transparency. At our leadership breakfast, I just asked for some really simple statistics on what the increase in enrollment was going to be over the next 5 years. How is that being planned, or 10 years, or whatever, into this housing? How many beds are for new students?
Yep.
I'd love to know.
Yep.
And so that would be great if, you know.
Okay. Well, we'll carry that back. I don't feel like, as the facilities guy, that's mine to speak on. That's probably more provost.
Because
than
it's been, again, really, you know, the numbers are changing every time we talk. And that would be helpful to understand the impact this is going to have, because bringing in new students is different than moving students around. So.
Right. So I can tell you that the target number is 15,800. That's, you know, from the provost himself. And so if we're putting in 2,000 beds on North Campus, some number of those beds represent additional students. And I think it's in the 800-900-ish range. And then some amount of those beds represent either folks who are currently off campus that would, not the individual person, but a student, you know, that would be off campus would have the ability to be on campus. And some people who, for instance, are in Balch Hall, we need to take Balch offline so we can renovate Balch and we can move it over. So it's a combination of those two.
I understand. And so what we asked for was just, again, it's what are the numbers? What are the facts? So that people can actually say, okay, this is what this development is.
So let me just finish up on the upstream methane. There is upstream methane. We don't know, we don't have agreement on a protocol to measure it, but there is upstream methane. And I think this really, my recommendation will be, and Bob is part of this, and he needs to be, is that this roll into that SCLC as part of the carbon neutrality, and that we come to some plan on how we're going to do it, when should we run our plant, when should we not run our plant, and buy power from NYSE. But you're exactly right. We need to get that some about consensus.
So thank you so much for staying a little bit later. Please join me in thanking you.
the time.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much, Rick. Appreciate it.
Sorry, I wrote the wrong one.
What are you trying to do that?
I appreciate it.
Okay.